Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of Legion of News is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News!
Atop the milk packing district in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon. This, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including but not limited to the following.
A deadly crash in northeast Portland has left one person dead. Egypt fights protests by raising salaries, and we add a Super Bowl.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, prepare yourselves for Legion of News.
Good afternoon, I'm Dawn Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Monday, February 7th, 2010. With protesters showing no signs of letting up, President Hosni Mubarak's new cabinet convened for the first time this week and approved a 15% raise for government employees, a traditional pillar of support for the regime.
Awesome.
The pay hikes will go into effect for 6 million people this April, assuming Mubarak stays in office that long, and will cost $960 million. Or roughly the equivalent of 3 days of protest. The raises come only a day after Mubarak met for the first time with the Muslim Brotherhood and agreed to a series of concessions, including promises that the press would be allowed to operate freely, the internet would no longer be censored, and a committee would be set up to consider constitutional reforms. Mubarak has promised to step down in September and prevent his son from pursuing office, but this has failed to placate the opposition, who remain camped out across the country. After being rushed to Cairo last week, U.S. diplomatic point man Frank Wisner shocked the White House on Saturday by publicly breaking with his bosses over Egypt, calling it critical for President Mubarak to remain in office. President Mubarak's continued leadership is critical, Wisner remarked. It's his opportunity to write his own legacy. The Independent's Robert Fisk pointed out that there's nothing surprising about Wisner's loyalty to the Egyptian leader. After retiring from a decades-long tenure at the State Department, the, quote, barrel-chested, martini-drinking career diplomat took a job 2 years ago at Patton Boggs, a litigation firm that counts the Egyptian government among its clients.
Does it really describe him as being barrel-chested, martini-drinking?
Yes. Well, this was The Independent. They can say things like that, apparently, in British newspapers.
Okay.
According to Fisk, the firm openly boasts that it works with the Egyptian military, the Egyptian Economic Development Agency, and has handled arbitrations and litigation on the Mubarak government's behalf in Europe and the U.S. Their lawyers also represent some of the leading Egyptian commercial families and their companies.
That's fantastic. I'd like to have myself described as that as in all, like, subsequent press releases, or just, you know, sort of like a, or just a picture of me catching a marlin.
Like in all company literature, just the picture of me fishing off the Florida Keys with a bottle of whiskey in one hand and a game fish on the end of a line in the other.
So we're just going to start referring to you as barrel-chested?
That's right.
All the time? Okay.
Exactly.
Can I be buxom?
Sure.
I've always wanted to be described as buxom.
Let's all be buxom. I'll see, but now I have to go back. Now we're already...
They were both chesty, and then that's just ridiculous. I'll have to be something else.
Okay. So we're only like 7 minutes into the day's show. We're only 7 minutes into the week, and so already now I have to start retracting and apologizing and reversing things. So now, have I got this backward? It's entirely possible that I do, because A, I'm not that bright, and also I don't think the caffeine has fully taken effect. So if I... Did I somehow reverse this in my head? Is the person who was driving the Kia Sportage the one who was the victim in the accident? Were they the one that was actually in this drunk driving?
Yes, they were the victim.
No, well, see now.
Chevy Suburban, the gigantic. It was two SUVs.
Although
the littler SUV got mashed by the bigger
SUV. Somebody is noting that I probably should not make fun of the person who was the victim of the drunk driving accident.
No, particularly since I think they died.
Yeah, see, and yeah. So that's not a thing Rick Emerson would do. Rick Emerson, that's where he draws the line. So everything I just said, you just take it and reverse it in your head, as Willy Wonka would say.
So now we don't like the name Suburban.
That's right. Well, we don't. I mean, let's just be honest. I don't even have to pretend. That's not even fronting, as the young people say. So, yes, you can just reverse the sentiments expressed earlier about the two drivers. Mm-hmm. You can just swap them all around. Then everything makes sense in your head. All right. Coming up later on the show, we get your science in the March, also entertainment news. This is Don Taylor.
Two men are behind bars in Ohio, suspected in a weekend shooting spree that killed a student at a Youngstown State University fraternity party and injured 11 others. Police Chief Jimmy Hughes says that suspects may have been angry because they'd been kicked out of the frat party.
It doesn't seem to be anything significant that we can understand, but yeah, they seem to be some type of feud and some type of disagreement.
Hughes isn't sure whether the gunmen have prior criminal records.
I'm Hughes!
My belief there might have been some juvenile history with at least one of them. So that's a process that's ongoing.
What is it with this guy's voice?
I don't know.
is this the guy who dated Miss DePesto on Moonlighting?
My belief there might have been some juvenile history.
No, I'm thinking of somebody else.
Yeah.
I can picture the guy. He's the, is he the guy who was the wheel man for Bonnie and Clyde? Is that who I'm thinking of?
Yes.
My belief there might have been some juvenile history with at least one of them. That's a process that's ongoing.
Had like a snap brim hat or whatever. All right.
Also, I think if you're going to be chief of police, at some point in your career, you have to stop letting people call you Jimmy.
And you have to quit talking like Barney Frank.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Well, here's a little casting notice that I came across. I wasn't actually looking for jobs acting, mind you, but I came across this casting notice for a local thing. The Portland Rose Festival is recruiting clowns for the clown corps who perform at the Rose Festival parade. So,
how much would I have to pay you to go audition to be a clown in the Rose Festival parade?
Oh, there's not enough money in the world.
Really?
Yeah.
That's a bold statement. I'm just saying we could start a fundraiser right now.
I'm wondering if we could...
For some sort of animal charity.
I wonder if we could find somebody, though. Anyway, auditions are March 16th and 17th, so we have like a month to prepare somebody to audition as a clown.
All right, so this is for the Rose... Okay, the clown corps does what exactly?
I have no idea. I avoid the Rose Festival as much as I possibly can, like every single thing having to do with it.
But is it a thing, like, do you suppose they're marching down the street, or is it a thing that, like, they're going to be dispersed across the city, like some sort of a Salvation Army?
So they perform in the parade, so I imagine they just, like, they're those guys that kind of walk down the sides along next to the cars and wave and, like terrorize children with balloon animals and...
Okay.
You know.
And so they don't have enough of those yet?
Apparently not. Apparently, they need a certain number of them, and you actually have to audition for it. Yeah, they're recruiting clowns for the clown course. So I'm saying anybody who has any clowning skills, please email me at dawn@rickemerson.com. I would like to try and find a clown.
Where did you see this?
This was actually in the Oregonian. Once a week, they do casting notices for local theater productions.
Do they know how much it pays?
No, I know nothing else. There's a phone number. You can call 503-227-2681 or go to www.rosefestival.org.
All right, hold on. I'm totally going to call this number next hour. Let's see. That's the only way to follow up my award-winning... awe-inspiring performance on Leverage is to take it to the clown.
So you would actually do the clowning.
Yes. Well, I mean, maybe.
Let's see.
Say, what is it? 503? What's the number?
227 2681. We have a month to get somebody to professionally get you some good-looking clown makeup and to teach you how to do some rudimentary balloon animals.
By the way, my clown name is going to be Stitches.
Okay.
So there you go. Stitches the clown.
That.
All right. That's all right. I'll follow up on that next hour. So if you're interested in getting your clown on, you just be listening next hour. We'll have more details on that. You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Here's Don Taylor.
An Oregon City police officer suffered minor injuries after he was involved in a collision with an Oregon State Police trooper in Gladstone. This happened Sunday at 9 p.m. at the intersection of First Street and Columbia Street. According to investigators, both officers were responding to assist with the search of a suspect who was trying to elude another Oregon State trooper on foot when the collision occurred. The Oregon State Police officer was taken to OHSU.
I'm confused.
Well, here, okay. Somebody was doing something that they were being chased by an Oregon State Police trooper.
Right.
So another police trooper and an Oregon City police officer were both speeding towards the scene of the crime.
Oh, I see. So they're converging on the scene, and then they converged on one another inadvertently.
And they crashed into each other.
Well, after the unpleasantness at the beginning of the show, I want to make sure that I've got everything correct.
Yes.
That I'm not somehow mislabeling all the parties involved in the accident. It is Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. It is Monday, February 7th, 2011. Thank you for coming by. Coming up next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program. Today we got the Week in Geek with Mr. Aaron Duran. Also, Oregonian music editor Ryan White will be in the studio with us. We've got a Clergy Watch coming up today, Snuff Watch coming up today, and clue number one for the next round of Name That Snack from E.H. Vending. Here is Don Taylor.
Did we have a winner for our last week's Name
We
That
did.
Snack?
We did. It. We had a winner, and we also had a hilarious near winner. We had somebody who guessed. I'll just say this, because we said that the final clue had something to do with our in-studio guest on Friday, who was Big Jim Willig. And so this was not the correct answer, but somebody actually emailed in and they asked if it was Big Hunk. So there you go. So that's a little bit of compliment if you're Jim. Something to make you smile. Put a little spring in your step today.
Pass that on to him so he knows what he's thought of in the community. Okay.
And by community, we mean in the community. Here's Don Taylor.
One of the oldest franchises in professional sports is a champion once again, as the Green Bay Packers won Super Bowl 45 and the trophy named after their former coach. Winning quarterback Aaron Rodgers gave a big shout-out to the fans and the organization.
It's game one?
Game six.
Game six.
That's named the Lombardi Trophy for a reason. Because we play and live in Titletown. We've got the best fans.
Titletown?
You know, an organization that believes in us, gives us the opportunity to be successful. And I can't wait to go home and see those fans and bring that Lombardi trophy.
Titletown's like living in... never mind. I was going to make a dumb Iggy Pop joke. Vince Lombardi's one of those guys, though, it doesn't matter whether you're into sports or not, if you have any sort of... Even anybody with the... I think if you live in this country, it's just sort of genetically imprinted on you to know who... I know what Vince Lombardi looks like. I know what he sounds like. I could quote you a bunch of crap that he said. And I don't know that I ever really spent any time... I mean, I think he was already like... Retired. He might have already been dead by the time I was born. I have no idea. But he's just one of those guys who existed in sort of the prehistory in the Paleolithic era of the NFL. But I just remember hearing his voice all the time growing up, because he was on every one of those NFL specials they would play, like in the week leading up to the Super Bowl or something, where they'd say, they called it the Ice Bowl, and then they would cut to like Super Bowl III or something.
I hear that always, and I can always hear that guy's voice in my head. It's like, Vince Lombardi.
I used to know that guy's name, the guy, and I'm forgetting it now, but the guy who is or was the announcer for the NFL for many, many, many years, because he was the guy that did the IBM Presents, You Make the Call, that guy, and he did all of those football documentaries. Which were impressive in the sense that they managed to be interesting even if you didn't give like a rodent's rump about football, which I typically did not. But
rodent's rump.
Yeah.
Packers wide receiver Greg Jennings had two touchdown catches and spoke after the game courtesy of the NFL. He said winning three road games in the playoffs and overcoming a lot of injuries prepared them for the Super Bowl.
It kind of defines our season. You know, a team that has a certain dynamic that a lot of teams don't have. But, you know, what separated us from the other 31 teams is, I think, that dynamic of unity and that will to overcome adversity.
You know, it must be weird if you're the Steelers, especially because, in a way, I'm kind of glad that I'm glad the Packers won, because growing up there was this whole weird division in my household where everybody was a Seahawks fan, obviously, because we were in Washington State, except for one of my older brothers who just, for some reason... he was a massive Green Bay Packers fan, which always caused like this strange tension in the household in the way in the way that only sports divisions can, in homes where that's taken really, really seriously, where he would come over occasionally, he'd have his Green Bay Packers shirt on, and my dad would just become, and it was like he'd walked in wearing, I was going to say it was like he'd walked in wearing a Klan outfit, except that's not the sort of thing that probably would have riled my father. It was like he'd walked in, it was like when a hippie comes over to visit the bunkers or something. And Archie just does that, just arches the eyebrow and just sort of shakes his head, and you can tell that there's going to be violence and drunkenness by the end of the night.
Kind of like when I was dating a guy who was like a long-haired, bearded artist guy who rode a motorcycle. And when the first time my mother saw him, she pulled me into the kitchen and she said, "What is that doing on the couch?"
Exactly. Whereas, like, that's a love the sin or hate the sin kind of a thing. On the other hand, there was a small part of me hoping that the Steelers would win, because every time the Steelers, they win, they get close to the playoffs, or there's any, sort of a chance that they're going to make it to the Super Bowl, then you just start wondering how they're going to step around the whole O.J. Simpson issue, because he's a whole part of that team's history that they have to very carefully navigate around this point, because he was obviously, like a crucial part of, he's a big part of the team heritage, but also you don't want to talk about him a whole lot because, stab, stab, stab. So
yeah, this time they just had to worry about a rapist.
Yeah.
So, and what NFL team doesn't have a rapist on it at this point, really?
I think the public has come to expect that, Don. Yeah. It's become tradition. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. Here is Don Taylor.
Oregon lawmakers will consider whether the state should become the first to pass the ban on plastic bags, a measure recycling advocates believe would trigger a domino effect among other states. Because, Oregon's such a trendsetter.
Because we're going to be the first to do the wipe with it, huh?
You don't listen to anything I say, do
you? No, but you just said something that I don't think is... I know this will shock everybody. I don't know that that's accurate.
That we would be the first to pass a ban on plastic bags, the first state.
Oh, okay. The first state. Okay. Yes, San Francisco has already done
right.
that.
Right. There are citywide bans on plastic bags.
All right.
We would be the first state to do so. So, ha!
Sorry, in my face.
A bill co-sponsored by two Republicans and two Democrats would outlaw throwaway plastic checkout bags at all retail stores in Oregon, a state that's already a leader in passing green legislation. Shoppers would be forced to bring their own bag or pay a nickel apiece for recycled paper bags under SB 536. A hearing is set for Tuesday on the proposed ban, which is supported by the Northwest Grocers Association and one of the state's biggest bag users, Fred Meyer Stores. Supporters expect a fight with the chemical industry.
There's nothing I like more than the government deciding how everybody should live every aspect of their lives, especially businesses. That really is always the way to prosperity, is having the government overregulate every single facet of your existence.
I like, though, that Fred Meyer is behind it, because it's like, the thinking there is it's like...
Nickels, baby.
Yeah, look at how much money we'll be saving. We don't have to buy the bags, and then if you don't have one, we get to grossly overcharge you for the bag.
No.
Woohoo! This is a big score for us. Because, they'll pass all those savings to us.
Seriously, what am I supposed to put my dog poo in now, huh? I mean, that's what everybody does with those plastic bags.
Yeah.
At least that's what I do with them. They all go home and they go into a special drawer at the house. Because then I don't have to go you talk about grossly overcharging for something. That's a thing that they just... I mean, it's more expensive than gold, I think. Those, dog bags that you buy, per pound. So that's what everything from the Safeway just goes into the drawer at my home. And that's what I use it to clean the crap for my dog with.
Gary Ridgway, the man known as the Green River Killer, will be charged with another murder. He's serving a life sentence without the possibility of parole. He's expected to plead guilty to the murder of Becky Marrero. Her remains were found in December by some teenagers who were hiking. King County Prosecutor Dan Satterberg said while Marrero was likely killed in the early 80s, the case is still fresh for her family.
Even though they're old cases and we call them cold cases, they are not cold within the families who lost someone, a beautiful young woman like this. They grieve every day. And like I say, they always thought that maybe he had killed her, but they didn't know for sure. And there's some peace to being able to know that.
I know what you're going to say right now. I can see the look on your face.
No, I was just going to read the next thing
on
the page.
You sort of furrowed your brow. Your brow was knit in puzzlement or concentration during that soundbite, as though you were processing a particular thought.
No.
This is one of those things where I'm trying to see if I can read your facial expression accurately.
I was just a little bit irritated with
the
guy.
Were you wondering if she was a hooker?
No.
Okay. That's what I was wondering.
No, that never even occurred to me.
Because isn't that the thing? Didn't he kill... I'm not saying she was. I don't know. But didn't he kill mostly hookers?
Sadly, as somebody who is something of a serial killer aficionado, I don't really know
a lot... bringing
shame
on everyone.
I don't
right
really
now.
Know a lot about the Green River Killer. I really don't.
All right.
Anyway, no, I was just annoyed at the guy, because I always find when these prosecutors and these DA guys go in front of, you know, TV cameras or they give interviews, when they editorialize, you know, and I realize that part of a lot of their job is PR, but it's just there's something about it that just always rubs me the wrong way.
Well, I think they've got to be elected. I think the chief prosecutors and whatnot, I don't know if they're appointed or if they have to actually be. If they're elected by the folks or something,
yeah.
Because that would explain a lot of these sort of, you know, if not in this case, in others, some of the grandstanding that you occasionally see from these guys when they get on the television. Also, I mean, he's been convicted of like 79 murders or something. So I mean, it's like really, what, you know, I guess on the one hand, it's like what does it matter if they tag a few more on the you know, but then what does it matter if they tag a few more on? I mean, it does seem like that's a. It does seem like that's a usage of the tax dollars that I suppose you can justify, but I don't know. We could probably find better things to do than to try to get him from 49 murders to 50, especially because he's not even going to be able to set a record because there's always some Russian guy. Have you noticed that? The last 10, 15 years, there's always some Russian dude in the news who killed like 570 people, like in a boarding house in St. Petersburg. Always. I don't know when. I don't know if that's a thing. If this is because of Glasnost or something, like the wall came down and suddenly all of the, you know, the sort of dirt from inside the Soviet Union, like we started finding out about things that were going on there. It's not a glorious workers' republic after all, because they would just say, you know, and this man, and it would be some huge, it'd be like some Russian guy with one eye and a huge scar across the middle of his face, you know, and like hooks for hands, and it would say, you know, this man, Ivan Katrunska, you know, is thought to have killed at least 7,000 people in his apartment building. And you're just like, well, we're never going to catch that.
Well, maybe that's the thing, though, is that Glasnost made people feel that they were more free to pursue their life's ambitions. This guy's life's ambition was to kill everyone in his apartment building.
Well,
anyways, so okay. Now I can fulfill my destiny and follow my dream.
What a country!
Anyway, back to the Green River guy. Satterberg says they'll continue to seek justice against Ridgway, who is one of the nation's most prolific serial killers.
One of. I mean,
it continues to be our goal to seek the truth about the magnitude of his crimes and to hold him accountable for all of those.
Remember, Gary, second place is first loser. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. Coming up later on this hour, we get your science on the march. Also, your entertainment news. And next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program takes the airwaves, encircling the globe and broadcasting to 147 countries via RickEmersonShow.com. Here is Don Tiggler.
So speaking of that Super Bowl, anybody who cares about it already knows the results. But if you are, you know, weren't really paying attention, or like me, you just kind of slept through all of it. The Green Bay Packers.
You missed the Darth Vader commercial. You slept through it.
I missed the Darth Vader commercial. The Green Bay Packers reclaimed the Super Bowl title. Actually, I'd already seen it.
Really?
On the YouTubes.
Ah,
so
I
had already done. The Green Bay Packers reclaimed the Super Bowl title on Sunday after a 15-year drought. The Packers beat the Pittsburgh Steelers 31-25 in Dallas, Texas, to claim victory in what the Chicago Sun-Times calls a classic game. Packers quarterback Aaron Rodgers dispelled memories of the team's legendary former quarterback Brett Favre by throwing three touchdown passes and scooping up the Super Bowl MVP award. And yes, as far as the Darth Vader commercial is concerned, a child actor has become an overnight sensation after appearing as a pint-sized Darth Vader in Volkswagen's Super Bowl commercial. 6-year-old Max Page was born with a congenital heart defect.
Is this four?
Five.
I was just thrilled to have a commercial like a movie I've never even seen. So I just tried my best.
How old is he?
Six.
All right.
It was adorable. It really is adorable.
I mean, a pint-sized Darth Vader is a thing that transcends and crosses all borders, all cultures, all backgrounds. That is what brings us all together right there.
And I will applaud Volkswagen because it actually makes their car seem likable. And I think that the people at Toyota could learn something, particularly the masterminds behind the Toyota Highlander commercial that has this whiny, redheaded brat kid who just keeps kvetching how his family's not cool because they don't drive a $30,000 SUV. And you just want to, like, smack the kid, and it makes me not to ever want to buy a Highlander ever, even if I could afford one.
Excellent.
Kudos to you, Volkswagen.
I wish that folks like you ended up in more focus groups. but that's never the case. It's like somebody like you. But the thing is, you're too smart to end up in a focus group, just like you're too smart to end up on jury duty.
I used to try and get in them every single time I'd be at the mall, and they'd have those ones where they'd have you watch the trailers for movies. And I remember Patrick and I sitting through one for Inspector Gadget with Matthew Broderick. And this poor woman having to take the notes as I was talking because she wrote really slowly. And I was starting to say, well, now, okay, question number six. Does the name Disney attached to this movie make you think that you would be more likely to see the movie or less? And I'm going, okay. I said, well, unlike the name Touchstone, for example, when the name Disney is on a live action film, that, and I'm speaking slowly so she get over, that generally means the movie will suck. That's S-U-C-K, suck. So, yeah, I actually love being part of focus group things and marketing stuff.
Every time I see a commercial like this, though, with a little Darth Vader kid, it just makes you wonder if somewhere George Lucas is just if immediately then he dispatches like a whole platoon of people at, in Marin County to just start working on like a Lil Sith. knockoff or something for the for the Cartoon Network. I mean, it's not like it's outside the realm of possibility that that's already in the pipeline. But you know, anyway, here is Don Taylor.
Sith babies.
That's awesome. I would totally watch a Sith babies cartoon.
Oh, let's do science.
Here's your science on the march for Monday here at Legion of News.
There's no cure for the flu, but Oxford University researchers say there may soon be a universal vaccine for it. Scientists have successfully tested a vaccine that targets flu proteins inside viruses rather than those on the viruses outside and boosts antibodies to protect against sickness. In a clinical trial, fewer vaccinated patients contracted the flu than those who weren't vaccinated. If field tests and further studies prove successful, scientists say it could mean the end of flu pandemics and seasonal shots. The problem with flu is that you've got a lot of different strains and they keep changing, said Adrian Hill, director of Oxford's Jenner Institute. Occasionally, one comes out of wild fowl or pigs, and we're not immune to it. We need new vaccines, and we can't make them fast enough. A Stone Age-era artifact carved with multiple zigzags and what is likely a woman with spread legs suggests that fertility rituals may have been important to early Europeans. The object, which will be documented in the March issue of the Journal of Archaeological Science, is made out of a large elk antler and has been radiocarbon dated to about 10,900 years ago. The ornament is composed of groups of zigzag lines and human representation, probably a woman with spread legs, with a short zigzag nearby. The woman may be nude, says the lead author of the study, but the geometrical style of representation does not allow us to answer this. So they analyzed the object. At first believed it was either the mentioned nude woman or a naked man raising his arms. Measurements to determine the ratio of the stick figure limbs, in addition to comparisons with other human representations, lead the researchers to support the woman interpretation. So, elk antler thing on a thing. Okay. All right. A new survey of American singles finds that men want babies and commitment, and women are more likely to want independence in their relationships. The survey, commissioned by dating website Match.com and underwritten in part by Binghamton University in New York, queried a nationally representative sample of Americans ages 21 to 65 and over. The results reveal the effects of massive social changes on gender relations, said Helen Fisher, a biological anthropologist at Rutgers University. We've seen since the beginning of the Industrial Revolution that men and women have growing economic qualities, she said, but now we're starting to see much more of how men are invested in attachment and commitment and how interested women are in preserving some of their independence.
I'm confused. Is this a survey of people in relationships or of single people?
Single people.
Okay. All right.
The internet-based survey was completed by 5,200 adults drawn from across the nation. The survey included more than 100 questions about people's relationships and preferences. The findings busted a number of gender stereotypes. Among single people who don't currently have a child under 18, 24% of men said they want kids, compared with only 15% of women. Men were also more likely to report falling hard and fast. 54% said they'd experienced love at first sight. Only 41% of women said the same thing.
Where are they drawing these participants from, does it say? I mean, are these people, are they getting these people from Match.com?
No, it said that they were not taken from Match.com's database. So, I don't know. It's an independent survey that was underwritten by universities, so I'm not sure how they drew the people to the study.
I instinctively disbelieve everything in this study.
Okay.
Well,
the woman said that that significant chunks of singles hold with relatively modern ideas about gender roles. When asked whether women should be the primary caregiver for children, 49% of women said no, as did 38% of men. Women are much more eager to have their own personal space. They're more eager to have their own bank account. They're more eager to have nights out with the girls than men are a boys' night out. And they're more eager to go on vacation without their partner than men are.
See, I believe all that. I believe all of the stuff about chick independence. The other half of that about guys, I can't wait to have 15 children and to be tethered to my home forevermore just rings false to me.
I don't know about the can't wait to do it, but I've known over the course of my life, I think almost every guy I've ever known has seen marriage and children as part of their future. They often will put it off as a plan, like, I'm not going to get married until I'm like 35 or something like that. But I've known many more men who have said, oh, I will definitely get married and have kids someday. Where I've known an awful lot of women who waffled back and forth, who went, maybe I will, maybe I won't, or have just flat out said, nah, I don't
really
want kids. Yeah.
Maybe it's because guys are just, guys tend to be more goal-oriented.
I think
so it's like, maybe guys operate a lot on the what's next principle.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I think that's absolutely true.
All right. Fair enough. You're listening to Science on the March. This is Legion of News.
Human brains have shrunk over the past 30,000 years, puzzling scientists who argue it's not a sign that we're growing dumber, but that evolution is making the key motor leaner and more efficient. The average size of modern humans has decreased about 10% during that period, from 1,500 to 1,359 cubic centimeters, the size of a tennis ball. Women's brains, which are smaller on average than those of men, have experienced an equivalent drop in size. Those measurements were taken using skulls found in Europe, the Middle East, and Asia. But anthropologists note that brain shrinkage is not very surprising, since the stronger and larger we are, the more gray matter we need to control the larger mass. The Neanderthal, or Thal, as whichever you prefer, a cousin of the modern human who disappeared about 30 millennia ago for still unknown reasons, was far more massive and had a larger brain. The psychology professor David Geary of the University of Missouri said that certain traits are necessary to survive in a hostile environment, and that as we are getting smarter and getting more efficient with our use of our brains, we don't need as many of those things. Social complexity and the ability to live together is more important than hardcore survival instincts.
So this is like the ability to get by with a smaller amount of food if you're eating more efficiently?
Right.
Okay.
And as I mentioned, even though chimps have a larger brain than a bonobo monkey, and even though a wolf has a much larger brain than a dog, dogs are far more sophisticated, intelligent, and flexible. And it's like with the bonobo. The bonobos are much more intelligent than chimps.
And I think they've, and over the years they've disproven that whole thing about, you only use 20% of your brain or whatever. I think it's what they've determined is that it's at any given moment in the day you're only using like 20% of your brain, but you use far more than that over the course of your life. But also, I mean, let's be honest, you get guys where it's like that Phineas Gage guy or just whoever, where you just get big chunks of your brain taken out by like some sort of a smelting accident.
Or that girl that I saw, the woman who lived like 20 years with like liquid filling her skull, and her brain was only a third the size that it was, but it did everything it was supposed to do.
They opened her brain, it was just like empty saltine wrappers or something inside her head. My God! And, and she was just sort of humming along fine in her life, so, I mean, yeah.
It was like when a bottle of mustard sits for too long and it separates and you've got that layer of just mustard juice on the top. That was her brain.
Your brain was mustard juice.
Her brain was partly mustard juice.
Now, there you go. Is that the end of science there?
Oh, God, yes.
All right. There's your Science on the March brought to you by Squires Electric here at Legion of News. You can find out more about them by going to squireselectric.com. Squireselectric.com or 503-252-1609. That is the phone number, 503-252-1609. Free estimates, no job too small, no job too large. They've done everything from a single power outlet all the way up to an entire building, actually, for the same guy. There was one guy, they went through his house. He started out doing a single outlet, then it was one room, then it was the house he moved into, then it was a building that he constructed from scratch, all three stories. He did all three floors of that. So you can find out more about them by going to squireselectric.com as you head into spring. If you're going to be remodeling a home or buying a home, if you're going to be moving your business from one location to another, you want to make sure that you pass all the appropriate inspections. Or if you've just got some sort of a yearly inspection coming up, or you've had any sort of damage, if you're getting anything upgraded, installed, repaired, replaced, augmented, you want to contact Squires Electric to make sure it's done correctly and done correctly the first time. Free estimate, so you know about what you're going to pay up front. 503-252-1609 is the phone number. You can contact them online at squireselectric.com. They are the sponsors of Science on the March here at the Legion of News at Cascadia.fm. Here is Don Taylor.
President Obama's call to the business community to get hiring, made at a U.S. Chamber of Commerce speech, carried with it a tone that if the administration makes it easier to do business, the owners have an obligation to hire. Harold Jackson, a Colorado medical supplies distributor, attended the speech.
That word obligation that concerns me, certainly nothing that I want to do more than to hire my employees back that we had to lay off. But as a small business, we don't have the luxury of deficit spending.
Jackson says it isn't so simple.
We have to justify why we're going to hire an employee. What are they going to do? What are they going to contribute? But we can't, you know, have a moral obligation to hire people because they're unemployed.
He sounds like a likable fellow.
You know, all the years that I worked in newspaper stuff, doing newspaper editing and newspaper writing, there are few things more boring than anything that is released by a chamber of commerce.
I was just going to say, I mean, maybe is there some super mega hella chamber of commerce that Barack Obama was speaking at?
Yeah, because he was at the United States, the National Chamber of Commerce.
Is it like having a national Kiwanis Club? It's like the National yeah, Toastmasters Society.
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay.
And I realize that chambers of commerce do a lot of really good stuff, and they're very good for small businessmen to network with each other. And they generally, you know, often do good in their communities. But dear Lord, they're boring.
Here's the thing about the Chamber of Commerce. When I hear that phrase, there's only two things that come to mind. One is that in reality, how do I put this? There's two things that happen. I get two images when you say Chamber of Commerce. The first is like a big Legion of Doom, Hall of Justice type of image appears where where they're all like, you know, where there's like Sandman and Solomon Grundy and Lex Luthor all sitting around a table together and saying, "And now we strike New York," or something. And then that sort of just vanishes in just like a haze of, you know, whatever, just sort of fritters away into the air. And then I get an image of what I believe to be the reality of it, where it's just like an Elks Lodge with like some bad card tables and just like some old guy sitting there talking about the Siege of Quezon, and that's it.
For the most part, it's not even that, because a lot of towns, like cities, for example, a lot of towns don't even really have an actual place that the Chamber of Commerce meets. You just join the Chamber of Commerce, and it's an organization that people belong to. And then there isn't, you know, an actual chamber per se. What happens is, you know, they get together once a month at somebody's business at like 7 o'clock in the morning to eat donuts and exchange business cards.
There is no Hall of Commerce?
Yeah, there is no actual Hall of Commerce.
All right. So it's not a thing we should be joining. We didn't really need to be.
Well, probably not now that I've said horrible things about it.
And I've compared them to supervillains.
Yeah.
Said that they're going to attack Manhattan.
The president admitted his relations with the Chamber of Commerce have been strained at times.
Okay.
We can and we must work together, whatever differences we may have. I know that all of us share a deep, abiding belief in this country.
This is one of those things that he doesn't want to be at. He just so desperately doesn't want to be at whatever this meeting is. And it, as you said, it's like 8:30 in the morning. He's had powdered scrambled eggs, and his employers, you know, or his, you know, his aides are just sitting off to the side, just looking at their Blackberries or something while he's speaking to this group of employers and business owners, and everybody is just sort of going. I'm thinking about more exciting things they have to do later on in the day.
They're basically waiting for the speech to be over so they can go stand in line and have their picture taken with him.
Then
they can get back to their insurance office and make their employees feel like crap.
Right.
Yeah.
By the way, if this is a Family Guy episode, we would now immediately cut to like the local, like the Portland Chamber of Commerce, where they would be in like a huge Legion of Doom style building, just lined with skulls and glowing red eyes. And they would be viewing us on a giant, like super telepsychotronic screen and saying, "That's it. Target Emerson."
I want to know what kind of feud is going on between President Obama and the Chamber of Commerce.
I don't know.
Because it sounds like maybe on the national level, the Chamber of Commerce are a bunch of costume supervillains.
It's possible. This guy certainly.
We have to justify why we're going to hire an employee. What are they going to do? What are they going to contribute? But we can't, you know, have a moral obligation to hire people.
This may be the dullest soundbite we've ever played.
Yeah.
All right. Here's Don Taylor.
A Canadian man has posted an advertisement on Craigslist saying he found a bag of 216 used women's panties and wants to return them to whoever collected them.
Uh-huh. Found.
The man said he found the underwear in a large green plastic bag in a bush at Beacon Hill Park.
Find them one by one?
In Victoria on Wednesday. He went through the panties one by one. Some were clean, some were not, he said.
Wonder how he determined that, Don.
Someone has probably gone to great lengths to collect these panties from different women along the way, the man's advertisement said.
Have they?
Adding that the rightful owner of the bag should contact him. He insisted the ad was serious. I can only keep these here until Sunday, he wrote, as that is when my wife returns from her business trip abroad. She will not be the least bit impressed with me when she sees what I have found. She may even think they are mine, wrote the man. The man said if no one comes forward by Sunday, he will leave the bag of panties at the corner of Dallas Road and Government Street next to a fire hydrant.
Where I imagine he will have some people waiting for him with a shiny new set of bracelets that he'll be able to wear for the rest of the day.
Victoria Police said they are not aware of any break-ins in which women's underwear were stolen, but said in general a small item like that might not be missed. You know, one or two panties here or there.
Did you say this
God,
is in Canada?
God, I hate the word panties. Yes.
I mean, either the cops really are just this laissez-faire about things up in the Great White North, or they're just sort of, they're playing it cool, as they say. Because I would imagine that somebody in this story probably is under a veil of suspicion now, and might not have been earlier. But having brought himself to the attention of the police might be...
But his ad, though, he just wants to give them back. He's not selling them.
No.
And if he wanted to just ditch them, he could just ditch them.
He doesn't... No, see, now we're just making assumptions. I'm just saying whoever... in some alternate universe, it seems to me that it is conceivable that in a situation like this, the person who has the bag of 216 panties...
Is actually the police?
No.
See, that was my thought.
What?
I would think my thought is that it's
Oh, you're saying it's the cops.
The cops are actually putting the ad on Craigslist to see if they can catch the guy.
Oh, you're saying that the cops found like a bag of 216 panties and they're hoping that the guy who like it fell out of the back of his van or whatever will show up like, "You've got my bag of panties."
No, I'm thinking that they either found it or it was turned into them and they realized that they were probably all stolen, so they're trying to set the guy up.
That's what I'm saying. Like the guy had it and it fell out of his car or whatever. The ne'er-do-well, he dropped
it.
And the cops have got it.
From ladies.
And they're like, if you would like to come and pick up your bag of panties, innocent man, and then he shows up and then they club him to death.
Right.
Oh, see, I wasn't thinking that. I was thinking that it's the guy who placed the ad, who I guess I can talk about because he's not been identified.
Yeah.
The guy who placed the ad really does, he was the one who collected the panties, however he did that. But that, of course, you know, a lot of these guys, like, it's not enough to just have it. Like, he has to sort of, you know, like, he has to sort of talk about it and find maybe other... Either A, he is hoping that some of the women whose panties were mysteriously stolen, will tell somebody who will tell somebody, and he'll get some sort of attention for this. Or that he will be there dropping the panties off, and a whole bunch of people will have gathered to see, hey, that crazy guy who placed the ad is going to be dropping the panties off today in the corner of whatever and whatever, because not unlike a strange sort of exhibitionist on the subway who likes to wave his tackle about, he wants to be seen with his bag of trophies or whatever. Because I'm not saying he's committed any additional crimes, but isn't that the thing with certain criminals like serial guys where it's like they have the bag of trophies or whatever? So it's like that's the thing where he wants to sort of show off his collection. Or here's the other thing: if I were writing a sort of a 1 hour episode of CSI or something about this, it would be that his wife really was coming home, or you know some situation similar to that. He was going to be after getting rid of the bag of panties that he had painstakingly collected over the years. But this would make it a great episode of Dexter. But his wife is coming home, wants to get rid of the bag of panties, read trophies, read evidence, but can't bear the thought of just dumping them into the trash or the incinerator or something, because, again, very important to him, because trophies. So he wants to make sure that they go to a like-minded fellow collector.
See, that's what I was going to suggest, that actually he doesn't want to admit that he stole them, but he's hoping that they will go to someone who has a similar interest. So it'll be someone who claims that they're his panties, but they aren't, really. They'll just wink at each other, nudge and nudge. It's like, oh, you're the one who lost these 216 pairs of underpants. And the guy says, oh, yes, they are mine.
Don't give them a good home.
Yeah, exactly.
This email just says, wow, too much thought put into what bag of panties, kids. and then Cheryl would like for you to... Cheryl just says, please make Rick stop saying panties.
Panties is a horrible word.
It's a horrible word. No, the thing is, neither of us like
that word so much.
You know who else hates that word is Sarah. We are all Cheryl, apparently, we're all on the same page there.
Why can't we call them underpants? What's wrong with the word underpants?
Yeah, underpants.
Why, because they're ladies, they have to...
Underwear? I would settle for underwear. I mean, I suppose the problem with that is that theoretically that could mean your brassiere as well, but nobody refers to your bras being underwear.
Yeah.
I mean, really. So
what are knickers? Knickers is a good... We don't say that here in America, and we should.
Under things.
You know...
Unders.
When they... The word pants in Britain refers to underwear. They say trousers for, you know, pants.
As in Wallace and Gromit.
Right. But instead of saying panties, which is hard, they say pants. What's wrong with that?
I don't know, and I want to start a whole thing here, but really, I know I'm like the 9 millionth guy to ask this, but what is up with there being a pair of pants?
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean,
it's the same as a pair of glasses. I'm really not sure. I mean, I guess
the glasses
started with monocles.
Yeah, you can actually have, and also a telescope is a glass, a looking glass.
All right.
So this is a pair of those. But I mean, you can't have a pant.
Yeah.
This makes no sense. Or like, I think it was Tom Likas who actually was talking about scissors, and he says like, he said, I want someone to show me a single sizz, which struck me as the funniest thing I'd ever heard. It was one of those little turns of phrase that just the right word at the right time. And the idea of somebody showing him, quote, a single sizz struck me as just unbelievably hilarious. Don't forget the Rick Emerson radio program with more wit and hilarity is coming up next hour. That is at rickemersonshow.com. rickemersonshow.com. Today, Clergy Watch, Snuff Watch, Mr. Aaron Duran at the Weekend Geek, and Oregonian music editor Ryan White. And don't forget, tomorrow, that is Tuesday, February 8th, 2011, Joelle Carter, who plays Ava Crider on the FX series Justified, will be joining us on the program. That is tomorrow. And then, let's see, what else? There's all kinds of goodness coming up this month. So tomorrow, on the Rick Emerson Show, Joelle Carter from Justified is going to join us. And I think you saw the email coming up later in this month.
I did indeed.
Mr. Seth Aaron of Project Runway going to be sitting in that chair right there. Or perhaps a more stylish chair that we purchased just for his just to hold his ass.
Yeah, that might be a good idea.
So we've got Seth Aaron from Project Runway. He's going to be in the studio with us later on this month. And then I believe, although I cannot swear to this, I believe Bill Carter, author of Fools Rush In and Red Summer. And the inspiration for my wife's Authors I'd Like to F book club, by the way. We'll be here as well. So
nice.
It's all very exciting.
So much, and we're going to find somebody to be a clown.
That's right.
So let's do our entertainment news.
Here's your entertainment news from Monday.
Christina Aguilera added to the growing list of Super Bowl entertainment debacles by forgetting the lyrics to the Star Spangled Banner at the NFL final on Sunday.
So wonderful. I really was tempted to stay home today and just watch it over and over and over and over again. It just warmed the inside of my heart.
Yeah, she was doing okay until she substituted for the ramparts we watched were so gallantly streaming with a variation on the earlier What So Proudly We Hailed line.
That darn second verse.
Singing What So Proudly We Watched at the Twilight's Last Gleaming.
Oh.
The Guardian reported it as the Twilight's Last Reaming.
Yeah. The thing is, you think that, like, I don't know, teleprompter. Or just maybe a guy whispering it in your ear or something.
And she says, I got so caught up in the moment of the song that I lost my place. From what I heard of it, she just got caught up in her caterwauling of trying to, like, you know, the whole, why use one note when 20 will do?
Yeah. Well, it's did you ever see that when Kat DeLuna did her rendition of the Star-Spangled Banner?
No.
Oh, it's the worst thing. It's like having it's like having cancer poured into your ears. It's so great. I'll find it. We'll play. You know what? Because you know what I collected. I have. I was thinking about making them all into one big montage and just some sort of a greatest hits. I have prepared for the beginning of the next show, the Rick Emerson Show. I don't even know that I'm going to end up playing it because I think it might be too much. I have 5 different failed versions of the Star Spangled Banner from different people. All and I was going to make them into like what we used to call a mega mix. Some sort of a 12-inch club mix, but I have all of these different versions. And then there's the Kat DeLuna one, which, as you said, is not that it's like she's messing up the song as such. It's just the whole thing of, like, why actually sing the notes on the page when you can just make up a series of notes between A and Z? But that Christina Aguilera thing is, you know why? And the problem here is that she's just bent on still proving to everybody that she can sing. Which is pointless. I mean, it's not like she doesn't get points for that. I mean, I guess she sort of does. I mean, I could admire that. But also, like, you've made the point. We all know you can sing. We all know you got a decent voice as opposed to whoever. Insert, like, it's not like you're still out there slugging it out with Mandy Moore on the pop charts. We know you can sing. Just let the recording do the work for you.
People seem to be extremely underwhelmed by the Black Eyed Peas.
Oh, this sucks. Oh, it was terrible.
A show performance critics dubbed absurd, gauche, and oddly appropriate.
Yeah, it was just dull. I just found it really... You know what the Super Bowl really ought to do? Is they ought to just do some sort of inversion attempt on this. Something where they just have a Super Bowl performance that is actually... I was going to say small and intimate, but that's not what I'm talking about. But, you know, maybe where they try not... Where they try to do something that is maybe powerful, but not so over the top. Because the idea that you're going to be able to out over the top the Super Bowl itself is just ridiculous. Yeah. That never works. I'm trying to think of the last time that I actually saw. I think the last time I saw a halftime show that it was adequately big, that was big enough to be on par with the game itself, was the year that it was.
The Stones did it one year, didn't they?
Yeah, but even the Stones I thought were not all that great because again, I love the Stones, but it's like it's still basically just five guys standing on stage. There was that year that it was Aerosmith. It was Aerosmith, NSYNC, Britney Spears, and like Kid Rock or somebody. Which, whether or not you like that sort of thing, is just there was a sense of bigness to it, which you don't have with like even like Bruce Springsteen. It's just like or Paul McCartney. I guess Paul McCartney's got the star power thing going on, but with Springsteen, as much as I love that guy, it's still just a band standing on stage. And unless you're there hearing the music, it doesn't translate to television. That's what they always forget: is it's a television thing. Black Eyed Peas should have been really interesting and just weren't. There was that whole moment that when what's-his-name was trying to... Will.i.am was trying to... He was trying to Twitter. He was trying to Twitter from the middle of the thing and he couldn't. And then his first Twitter afterward was like, goddamn AT&T, which is just... just was wonderful. You know that there's some guy at AT&T just jumping out of a window at that moment.
Well, Shia LaBeouf, whose name translates to bashful beef...
Really?
No, not really.
Okay.
Was handcuffed and released Saturday morning after an alleged bar altercation at Mad Bull's Tavern in Sherman Oaks, California. A source told Us Magazine that the 24-year-old was incited by a patron before he was sucker-punched in the mouth outside the bar. Authorities who drove by the area put LaBeouf in handcuffs, questioned him, and released him after 1 a.m. The bar's owner said, "It was just boys being boys. Things got really out of hand, and it didn't need to have gone down the way it did. No one needed or should have gotten hurt. Things could have been dealt with in an entirely different way."
Imagine being punched in the face by Shia LaBeouf. How could you even look yourself in the mirror?
I don't understand why... Shia LaBeouf is one of those guys, and it's... Not to get into too much detail about this, but I watched your Bigger Than Jesus DVD this weekend.
Ah, yes.
And you're talking about your feelings about Kurt Cobain.
Yes.
And just I feel similarly about somebody like Shia LaBeouf. And it's like, what do you have to be so screwed up about?
Seriously.
I mean, you're young, you're good looking, you're making movies, you're rich as F-all.
He has already been in two of the largest film franchises in history.
You know, why do you keep getting in trouble like you're angry about something?
Right.
Like, you just take a few minutes and look around and figure out you don't have anything to be angry about right now.
Don't you think that would make a fantastic reality program? You know, where when one of these guys gets into trouble, you know, like, goes off and starts a bar brawl, and it's some dick, you know, it's some Shia LaBeouf type, type a-hole, who's just, like, you know, just punching a guy in the chops for no reason, that instead of just sentencing him to jail or, like, celebrity rehab or whatever, they just say, you know what, you're going to go work at, an assembly plant that makes garden hoses in Akron, and you're going to do it for a month and a half, dick. And then they just stick him on a bus somewhere, you know? And it's like, what's your job going to be? You're going to go work in a toothpaste factory, a-hole. And then that's his punishment.
I like that.
I mean, that is how Rick Emerson's America will operate.
He has to go around with the dirty jobs guy, with Mike Rowe. And just spend like a month doing all the things that Mike Rowe has to do.
How satisfying would that be? You know, and it'd be like one of those things where he's got to scrape out like thousands of pounds of bat guano or something from inside a chimney.
Yeah.
That'd be fantastic. I like the way you think.
Thank you. Gary Moore, best known as the guitarist of Thin Lizzy, has died, according to the Irish Times. The 58-year-old's corpse was found in a hotel room in Estepona, Spain, on Sunday. A postmortem is scheduled in Malaga. During the run, Thin Lizzy scored hits with Whiskey in a Jar and The Boys Are Back in Town.
He also had a great... might not have held up so well over the years. He had a great song that came out in the early 90s called... a song called Still Got the Blues, I think, which is the title track of the album of the same name, which I had to play a lot as a DJ, and I learned to hate it, but I, over the years that I, I listened to it again with fresh ears some years ago, and it was actually still really good. And an underrated guitarist, one of those guys, like, because everybody knows Thin Lizzy, and people know Phil Lynott. But the other guys in that band, I think, got overshadowed by Phil Lynott because he was, you know, because he also, you know, because he died young and was very charismatic and whatnot. So, all right.
Thin Lizzy, a grotesquely underrated band, in the United States.
Just absolutely.
Wonderful band.
Well, Thin Lizzy is sort of like a little bit like T-Rex, in that they got the one hit here, you know, or the two or whatever, because the T-Rex has just got, like, bang a gong, basically.
Yeah.
And I think, I don't think they've had any of their hits that ever charted here. But everybody else, you know, in the rest of the world, obviously Mark Bolan sort of walks on water, except for here. Just like Kylie Minogue.
Stupid Americans.
That's right.
Simon Cowell announced the prize for the upcoming American version of his talent show, The X Factor, today, a $5 million record deal with Sony Music. The prize is the largest in television history. Show creator Cowell also revealed that the American X Factor would be open to contestants as young as 12 years old. Unlike his hit American Idol, the competition is open to vocal groups as well as to solo singers. He said, "I've never believed there should be a cutoff age for talent, and we're going to put our money where our mouths are with a $5 million recording contract." Cowell, a creator of American Idol and a former judge in the show, will judge the U.S. X Factor, along with British singers George Michael and Cheryl Cole.
George Michael, really?
Yes. Additional judges and the show's host will be announced in coming weeks. Auditions for U.S. X Factor will begin on March 27th in Los Angeles, and will be followed by auditions in Chicago, Dallas, Miami, Seattle, New York, and New Jersey.
I wonder if George Michael's just trying to figure out, like, what's the least amount of work he can do while still getting paid the maximum amount of money. And it's this. It's like showing up for, like, 90 minutes a week just to watch somebody else sing.
Well, what's really awesome is I love Simon Cowell.
Yeah.
I love Simon Cowell. The man has an ego the size of
Hall
Outdoors, but he was great to watch on American Idol because he actually made American Idol watchable because he was always right.
Right.
And he owned the show and he had nothing to lose. And obviously, one thing he knows when putting together his American X Factor is he remembers how much press he got from crazy Paula Abdul.
Totally.
So now it's like, what's he going to do here? Crazy George Michael.
Woo! All right. That might get me to watch that. There you go. Excellent. With that, we should bring down the curtain on this, another exciting episode of Legion of News. Thank you for joining us today. Don't forget that Legion of News comes your way each and every weekday from noon until 1 p.m. from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the Milkpacking District in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk, Don Taylor, Advanced Technology and Magic, provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, Executive Producer Bruce Agler, Chief of Staff Cheryl Kenakoa. You can get this program later on the day via iTunes or as a direct MP3 download here, or at legionofnews.com. The Rick Emerson Show is next at rickemersonshow.com. Thank you for joining us, and have a fantastic Monday, won't you please? We will see you again tomorrow at noon for another exciting installment of Legion of News.